Okay, well, thank you for all who are attending. This is the Fats, Fuels, and Oil Forecast for November 2nd. Today I have Tori Alden with us, who's our senior analyst, and he's going to go over vegetable oils and the adjustments he's made to the forecast. If you have any questions during the presentation, go ahead and drop them in the Q&A section, and we'll be sure to get them at the end of the presentation. Tori, you want to take it from here?
Thanks, George. So over the last couple of weeks, soybean oil prices and world veg oil prices in general kind of rose up to relatively high levels before pressure in energy prices, specifically crude oil, triggered some selling. That selling might have been exacerbated a little bit in soybean oil by some additional weakness across the soy complex. But over the last 2 days, oil is bounced back sharply, and that's helped provide some support. And it looks like, you know, energy is obviously going to be a huge factor going forward. But soybean oil stocks in world vegetable oil fundamentals, remain pretty bullish. And so we think that, generally across most veg oils, prices should remain well supported through the seasonal low in palm oil output before we could. That's probably the earliest that we can see some weakness. Now, the big caveat there is that if something happens in the U.S. election and energy prices were to turn back around and start to fall pretty sharply again, then I think that you could find veg oil prices under pressure, specifically for soybean oil. If you get selling across the soy complex, then again you could find some pressure in the short to medium term. Right now, most traders in the soy complex are focused on Brazilian planting, which got off to a slow start because of dryness, but is catching up quickly. The outlook for the growing season in Brazil is going to largely be dictated by the impact of La Nina. If you look at the impact of La Nina on South American production, there's a real impact there. But if you take USDA's estimate of U.S. yields at face value, and we really had yields that were about 52 bushels an acre during one of the drier finishes to the growing season that I can remember. Even if we have some dryness due to La Nina, Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, and Uruguay are probably still going to produce relatively big crops. And I think that could produce some pressure. I don't know that that means that soybean prices go back down below 10 and soybean oil falls sharply below 32 cents or anything like that. But in the short term, I think you probably could see soybean oil prices fall back down towards the low end of the recent trading range. Either way, I think the one thing that is going to continue for the foreseeable future is volatility. Soybean oil and world vegetable oil prices have been particularly volatile over the last month and a half. And I think that that's probably going to continue just given sort of this back and forth between world vegetable oil fundamentals, which are extremely bullish, and everything else that's going on. So you get a lot of support from world vegetable oil fundamentals. But then you have energy prices collapse, and so prices move around a lot as traders try and figure out exactly what all of this means for soybean oil going forward, and more broadly, world vegetable oil prices going forward. In terms of changes we made to the model, we got the monthly fats and oils report from the USDA yesterday. And that gave us our year-end stocks number for soybean oil. So that came in just below 1.85 billion pounds. That was in line with our pre-report expectations. and also generally in line with where we've been over the last several years. I think this is probably one of the last years that we'll have stocks at this level, given the outlook for rising feedstock demand from renewable diesel production. And in fact, you can see that we have for 21-22, we have stocks falling down to 1.57 billion pounds. That's not the low end of the range. The low end of the range is closer to 1.1 billion pounds. If this was extended out farther, you would see we get down closer to that level, maybe the following year, as we start to really get a lot of renewable diesel production coming online and run into capacity constraints or production constraints in the low CI products. And whenever we do that, then soybean oil is going to be the feedstock of choice, at least until the pathway for canola oil in renewable diesel is approved by the EPA. The data that was implied by the fats and oils report, there was nothing really earth-shattering in there. There were a couple little anecdotal things. It was the first month for the marketing year that production fell below 2 billion pounds, but it wasn't substantially below 2 billion pounds. And domestic usage also fell below 2 billion pounds for the first time in the last 3 or 4 months. That was largely driven by weakness in non-biofuel demand as basis levels start to limit that demand. And I think that's probably going to be the theme, and something that we talk a lot about in the coming years is the competition between biofuel producers and non-biofuel users of soybean oil, and how that all shakes out will have a huge impact on where we think prices can go. For the outlook for the forecast, there's one thing I would note is that while we have prices well supported through the spring, they may not be as optimistic as some people have them. And that's because I think that we're going to see a record crush next year. You look at the crush margins right now, soybean meal demand is good. And that record crush is going to provide ample supplies for soybean oil throughout the marketing year. So if you look sort of at the month by month stock numbers, our projection shows stocks remaining above 2 billion pounds really until almost this time next year, until just a couple of months before this time next year. And then we get a pretty sharp drawdown towards the end of the year to get down to our forecast for the end of the year. One thing that's going to be really critical next year is soybean oil yield. This gets to be a little bit in the weeds, but I'll just make a quick point here, because production and supply next year are going to be really crucial. If we don't have all of the supply that we're anticipating, then that stocks number falls further. And then at some point, this chart starts to look a whole lot different and just goes up and to the right. If you look at the relationship between soybean oil yields and temperature in September, in rainfall in September, there's a fairly clear relationship. And this year we had drier weather, not necessarily hot weather, but drier weather. And that tends to imply soybean oil yields above the average, if you took the average of the last several years. We're coming off a year when soybean oil yields were below that average, and so that additional supply will be really helpful. But if oil yields aren't where we expect them to be, then stocks could get tighter, and we'll need to cut probably our non-biodiesel usage. We also got we got the same data from USDA for canola oil. you can see our canola oil forecast is relatively flat going forward. A little bit of that is due to a compression in the spread between soybean oil and canola oil because of the return of low CI feedstocks and the impact that that has on the demand from biodiesel producers. That said, we expect that demand from biodiesel producers is going to remain pretty strong because renewable diesel producers will prefer low CI feedstocks to veg oils. That leaves a gap for biodiesel production that's probably going to be filled by canola oil. Nonetheless, we still expect that spread to compress a little bit, and that kind of keeps our outlook for canola oil prices flat. Of course, as we say that, cash prices in Canada reached more than $1,000 a ton, $1,033 a ton in the last week, and potentially could go up to $1,050 a ton here in the relative short term if we get a big recovery in energy prices. But here in the U.S., I think that we might not all of that all of those gains might not translate into the U.S. For canola oil, the year-ending stocks number was 132 million pounds. That is getting towards the lower end of the historical range. Typically, when I forecast canola oil ending stocks, I like to be around 200 million pounds. That said, it looks like we're going to remain in that range or maybe a little bit above that range over the next year. Again, a big part of whether we're here at 168, below 132, or above 200 will depend a lot on this number. If we don't get 1.66 billion pounds of demand out of biodiesel producers, then this number could change a whole lot. Just kind of quickly over to palm oil. Palm oil prices have remained really well supported. Chinese cash prices have surged past the mid-September highs that we saw earlier this year, as they continue to deal with a shortfall in rapeseed oil production due to the flooding that they had this summer. And palm oil has also been supported by shutdowns in Malaysia that have cut production capacity by as much as 300,000 tons a month at a time when export demand remains pretty strong. Cargo surveyor data for October suggested that palm oil exports out of Malaysia grew about 5% from September. So you've got relatively strong demand at a time when not only do you have lower production, but you also have relatively tight stocks, which are riding around 3-year lows. We'll get the next MPOB report on November 10th, and we expect that that report will show a further tightening in stocks, which will continue to support prices. But then we think that probably demand starts to slow down a little bit, and that's the reason that we've got for the big decline. The other reason we've got for the big decline here is that the drought that we had in Malaysia last year, not really drought, but a little bit drier than normal conditions that we had last year, could set up a situation where production actually surges this year, based on normal rainfall. And so with that expectation, we kind of expect stocks prices to come under pressure as we get towards the seasonal low in output, which occurs in February or March of next year. With that, George, I think I will open it up for questions.
Okay, Tori. So we have a couple questions here. What's your outlook for soybean oil basis?
Soybean oil basis levels are at the highest that we've seen since 2014, and they probably are going to remain firm for a little bit longer. That said, I do think, like I said before, the build in inventories due to record levels of crushing should hopefully provide some relief to end users. However, one thing that could have an impact on that, the spread between palm oil and soybean oil has fallen back down close to parity, or it was, as of yesterday, it was down about at 0.75 cents. At that level, it really favors importing countries switching to soybean oil, which is a big reason that we had much larger than expected soybean oil exports last year. And so we could have that, a repeat of that situation again this year. If that happens, it's going to be awfully tough for soybean oil basis levels to come down. Now, we've got exports, relatively robust exports built in because of the situation and because of what's going on in Malaysia. So if we don't see that switching, we would be more in the camp of cutting our export number, which would have probably an outsized impact on basis levels here over the next several months. Beyond that, I think that we probably will get to a peak here over the next couple of months, and then we'll start to see the increase in inventories weigh on basis levels.
Okay. Thanks, Tori. For the attendees that are on, I realize there's a lot of attendees due to the 14-day trial that ends today. If you have questions, drop them in the Q&A section in Zoom, and then that way we can address them as they pop up. One of the questions we have, Tori, is what do you believe the impact of the elections is going to be on the veg oil markets?
I think there's a lot of risk either way, and it's tough to kind of sort it out. This is something that I've spent a fair amount of time thinking about and a lot of time talking to people about. It for soybean oil, it really kind of comes down to the impact on soybean prices. And there's a couple of different ways that you can look at this. Obviously, we got into or trade tensions between the United States and China were at sort of all-time highs over this last year, and that ultimately resulted in the phase one trade deal being completed and Chinese agreements to buy a lot of U.S. soybeans. That's part of the reason that soybeans are at the level that they're at today. That said, that buying isn't solely driven by that phase one agreement. China really needs those soybeans. China's been crushing soybeans at a pace that's about 105 million tons a year, which is well above where USDA is and well above where we are, to be frank about it. But in order to support those volumes, they're going to need a lot of soybeans. So you could make the argument that no matter who wins the election, China is still going to buy a lot of soybeans from the United States. And in that case, it's the impact of the election is relatively modest, or at the very least, any impact that occurs is relatively short-lived. On the if you wanted to make an argument one way or the other, I think you can make an argument. So I think if you wanted to say that, hey, you know, the phase one agreement is an important part of why China is deciding to buy soybeans from the U.S. And that will be important later on in the year when the U.S. prices aren't necessarily at a huge advantage relative to prices out of Brazil and Argentina. I think you can make that argument. I don't know that I would put a lot of stock in that argument, just simply because the Chinese buyers are people like us, and they have a job to do, and that job is to buy soybeans as inexpensively as they possibly can. And so economics are always going to play some degree of, or always going to have some degree of influence on where China decides to purchase. I also think that you could potentially say if Joe Biden wins that U.S. and Chinese relations will become less tense, and from that perspective, China will increase purchases from the U.S. All of that just gets back to the fact that as long as China needs the soybeans, China is going to have to buy the soybeans. And right now, we're the only game in town. As we get into January and February, that will start to switch, and the Brazilian crop will come in. And then a lot of where China buys soybeans will depend on the size of South American production and that kind of thing. The last thing that I'll say about this is, I think that there's some potential for, and this is a little bit outside of my sandbox, so just be forewarned. There's some potential for concerns about rising taxes to trigger a broad sell-off across asset classes like we saw last week. And that triggered a pretty sharp decline in soybean prices, energy prices, the things that we were talking about. In that case, I think that that soybean oil prices could come under pressure. But I think that that would be a relatively short-term event. Those things tend to happen in part because people that use a lot of leverage need to make margin calls, and commodities tend to be one of the places that they look to raise money to make margin calls. Once that kind of pressure has subsided, then prices get back to where they make sense from an economic perspective. So I think any kind of election uncertainty that drives a broad sell-off like that, the impact will be temporary. It might be severe, but it'll probably be temporary. And to the extent that end users can take advantage of a situation like that, if it were to occur, I would strongly suggest that they do that.
All right. So, Tori, you got a few more questions here. Have you made any changes to your Canadian canola crush forecast?
We didn't make any changes this week. Canada has been crushing canola at a pretty rapid clip. A couple of weeks ago, they crushed like 223,000 tons. That was a record for at least as long as COPA has been providing weekly data. And they've slowed down a little bit, but it's the weekly pace still remains substantially above 200,000 tons a week, which suggests that we probably are going to be pretty close to the 10.15 million ton level again this year. And also, given what we expect for biodiesel demand out of the U.S., that suggests that not only will Canadian crush probably remain relatively strong, but U.S. crush will probably remain relatively strong. So that's a very long-winded way of saying we didn't make any changes this week. We're at like 9.75 right now, but the chances are our next change is going to be higher rather than lower. And it's probably not going to be 2 months before we raise it up to 10 million tons. It's probably going to be in the next couple of weeks that we raise it up to that level.
Okay. Well, Tori, this is the last question, unless I get more questions from the audience. Have you made any updates to the calendar year balance sheets?
So the calendar year balance sheets are just going through sort of final approval from all of the various analysts here. And I would expect that those will be up in the next day or two, if not, if that long. They might be there earlier than that, but I would expect that we'll have calendar year balance sheets for soybean oil, canola oil, and the low CI feedstocks up here by the end of the week, certainly, if not tomorrow.
And Tori, could you just show the audience where they would find that?
What I think we're going to do is a couple of things. So I think we'll probably put a calendar year balance sheet for the individual commodities under each of their sections. So the soybean oil one would be under soybean oil, and the soybean oil section and canola under canola oil. Same for for fats and oils. I think we probably will have a calendar year section here that will have each of the individual commodities. And then what we're going to also have is a calendar year balance sheet section under biodiesel. And the balance sheets that we have under the biodiesel section will be roll-ups. So we'll have a fats and oils balance sheet and or a fats and greases balance sheet. And then we'll also have a veg oils balance sheet that rolls up all of the individual commodities to give you a better perspective on what's going on in each of those areas. And then we'll have a total feedstocks balance sheet that rolls everything up into one balance sheet, so you can see what the total feedstock supply and demand looks like.
All right. Thank you, Tori. I appreciate that. That is all of the questions that we have. If anybody has additional questions, you can email me at george@thejacobson.com. Tori, thank you for your time, and we will chat next week.
Thanks, George. Thanks, everybody.